What's up, everybody? How you guys doing? Good? Oh, man. Well, that was pretty bad. Well, happy 4th of July weekend, everybody. It is July 5th. We are officially an independent country. If we've never met before, my name is Josiah. I'm one of the pastors here at the church, and I oversee the young adult ministry. So if you are a young adult in this room and we haven't met before, I would absolutely love to meet you. We have some awesome stuff at the church that I'd love to introduce you to. But over the course of the past, I don't know, month or so, we've been in a series that we're calling 90 Days with Jesus. And the premise of the series is we've basically throughout the course of the summer have been reading the four gospel accounts, the four biographies of Jesus's life that are found in the Bible. So if you've been reading along, that's really dope. If you haven't been, you can jump in right now. What's really cool is it's not too late to jump in. You're gonna get to see a bunch of really awesome stuff. But where we're gonna be hanging out today in that whole plan is in Matthew chapter 23. And in Matthew chapter 23, Jesus raises a really important question that if you're here, man, and you're like skeptical of Christianity and skeptical of like churches and Christians, and if Christianity has ever like given you the ick, you know what I mean? I think today is gonna, you're gonna find today really, really fascinating. About 3 years ago, there was a study that was done that really stuck with me. I've talked about it a few times before, but the Barna Research Group asked a bunch of non-Christians in America, what is the number one reason that you are skeptical and doubt Jesus? What's the number one reason you stay away, stay clear of Christianity? And what I found was fascinating because the number one reason that somebody doubted Jesus actually had nothing to do with Jesus. It also had nothing to do with like the Bible. It had nothing to do with like science and evolution and like that kind of stuff. It also had nothing to do with pain and suffering, which is what I thought the number one answer was going to be. The number one reason a non-Christian doubted Christ was because of the quote, hypocrisy of religious people. Because of the hypocrisy of religious people. And I know that many of us in this room, that has been exactly your experience. You have a friend or a family member or whatever, you grew up in a certain environment where that person claimed to be a follower of Jesus, but in all reality, that person acted a very different way or treated you very harshly, and that's the reason you wanna stay distant from religion, and I don't blame you at all. So the question I wanna ask today is, if Jesus is supposedly so incredible and so loving, because that's what everyone's talking about, how loving God is. If Jesus is supposedly so loving, why are the people who say they believe in him so often so hypocritical? And it turns out that if you read the stories of Jesus, Jesus actually has a lot to say about this. And he's far more, it might surprise you to find out that he's far more offended and upset with the hypocrisy of the people who claim to be his followers than anyone in this room is, and anyone in the world is. So Matthew chapter 23, that's where we're gonna be hanging out. The storm's gonna happen, there's gonna be some thunder, everybody's gonna be an adult and deal with it. Colton, you can turn me up a little bit, so that'll be good. Let me give you like the layout of how tonight is gonna go. For all you type A people that's like, when's this thing gonna be done? You know, let me give you the layout. We're gonna spend the first half of our time talking about where does hypocrisy come from? What even is hypocrisy? And then we're gonna spend the second half of our time right in the halfway point, we're gonna start talking about three symptoms of hypocrisy. Okay, Matthew chapter 23, verse 1, here's what it says. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples. So a bunch of people following Jesus, they're interested in what he says. He's got a big group around him, and he says this to them. Everybody listen. The teachers of religious law in the Pharisees are the official interpreters of the law of Moses. The law of Moses were the books of the Bible that had been written up to this point. So he's saying the teachers of religious law and the Pharisees, they are the official interpreters of the Bible. So practice whatever they tell you, do what they say, but do not follow their example. Okay, let's pause right there. Back in Jesus's day, kind of the church leaders. So think of the pastors, the priests, the worship leaders, the church staff, the Christian musicians, the Christian that wrote that book at Hobby Lobby, the Christian that has a podcast with an opinion. Like all of those guys were a group of people that were called the teachers of religious law in the Pharisees. These were like the leaders of the church. They were the ones that moved the church forward. And what Jesus says about these guys is absolutely fascinating. Notice, he does not say that these guys have misinterpreted the Bible or twisted the Bible. So obviously in our country, in around the 16 to 1800s, there were a bunch of American pastors in the South that twisted the Bible to justify and support slavery. That's twisting the Bible. That is not these guys. Actually, Jesus says these guys' interpretation of the Bible is correct, and their theology is legit, and their churches are good, and you should listen to them, and you should do what they say, but don't follow their example. Do what they say, but don't follow their example. Why? What is Jesus getting at? Okay, here's a big point. Ready? It is very possible to have everything right, but still be fundamentally wrong in your relationship with God. Everybody needs to hear me on this. This is very important. It is very possible, in fact, very easy, to have everything right, every box checked in your relationship with God, but still be fundamentally wrong. In six times in this passage, Jesus calls this group of Christians, elite Christians, he calls them the same word over and over again, hypocrite, 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 hypocrite. Okay, what does the word hypocrite actually mean? Well, there's two layers of hypocrisy, two layers of how we would define hypocrite. There's kind of like a shallow layer, and then there's a more, the deeper layer. So the more surface level definition would be someone who says one thing, but then does another. Someone who says one thing, but then does another. A couple months ago, my brother and my wife were in the kitchen of our house, and we were just talking. And my wife has the worst arachnophobia, fear of spiders, I have ever seen in my life. It is unbearably ridiculous. She watched Harry Potter 2 one time, and the rest was history. And so as we're talking, we're just having a regular discussion. A little, you know, Charlotte, you know, little itsy bitsy spider starts crawling on the kitchen island, and she, kill it, kill it, and looks at me and just wants me to freaking obliterate this thing. And so what I do is I very calmly grab a paper towel, and I, you know, scoop the spider onto the paper towel, and I go outside into the wilderness, and I release the spider back into its natural habitat. And I walk in, and my wife is staring at me with death eyes. And she goes, that's not what I told you to do. I told you to kill it. Now, it was at this time that I made a poor decision. I made the decision to give my wife a speech. And so I launch into saying, oh, Sarah, oh, simple Sarah. I've been convicted for the past 2 weeks that, all, you know, all creatures are wonderful and God made all of them. And who are we to say that this spider would die? It's doing nothing wrong. Why do we think this spider is less valuable than the neighbor's dog? You know, I'm going to release it back into creation just as God intended it. You know, I'm standing on my high horse giving this speech, going on and on. And as I'm giving this speech, a mosquito flies by and I go, stupid mosquito, I hate these things. And I smack it and kill it. And my brother, Isaac, is just standing there and goes, what happened to Mr. Earth? What happened to all creatures are God's creatures? What's the difference? Well, the difference is I don't like mosquitoes. We tend to define hypocrite as someone who says one thing and then does another. And that's true. That is one layer of hypocrisy. But Jesus is actually talking about a much deeper level of hypocrisy. And this kind is far more serious and far more dangerous, but it is far more subtle. And it exists in all of our hearts to one degree or another, and it is nearly impossible to detect. Hypocrisy, and especially in the context of Christianity, the way Jesus is talking about it, hypocrisy is letting God transform your life without letting God transform your heart. This is very dangerous. The hypocrisy he's talking about is letting God transform your life without letting him transform your heart. This is a person who does all the right things. Every box is checked. I mean, they look like someone who absolutely loves God, but they do it for all of the wrong reasons. And Jesus is far more concerned about this second person than he is the first person. Now, how does someone become a hypocrite? Like, how, you know, no one set out to be a hypocrite. Like, how does this actually take place? Well, actually, just a few paragraphs before in the Bible, Jesus actually explains to the Pharisees exactly what is happening in their heart that has caused them to become hypocrites. There's a very famous quote where Jesus says, listen, here's what it means to believe in God. Here's what it means to follow God. Let me summarize the whole thing for you. Here's what it means to believe in God. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And if you do that, that's everything that it means to follow Jesus. That's everything that it means to have a relationship with God. Here's a way to conceptualize this. If you take the heart, soul, mind, strength, For all you visual people, here's maybe a way to visualize this. Imagine for a second that your life is a pyramid, and the top of the pyramid is the most obvious part that the world can see, and then the deeper you get into the pyramid, the more subtle it is, but it's fueling what's at the top. So at the very top, if we take heart, soul, mind, strength, put it in reverse order. At the very top of the pyramid is your actions. It's your strength. This is the things that you do. So obviously this morning you decided to wake up and to drive to church. And maybe you decided to make coffee. Maybe you decided to say something or not say another thing. Maybe yesterday for the 4th of July you chose to go one place and not another place. That's your actions. It's the most obvious thing because everyone can see your actions. That's what you do. But what fuels your actions is a layer beneath that, and that's your intellect or your mind. What do you think about the world? And obviously that's going to determine the decisions that you make. So what do you think is good and what do you think is bad? What opinions do you have about, politics or family or Christianity or yourself or whatever? That's what's in your mind, and obviously it funnels to your actions. But then there's a layer beneath that. And a layer beneath that, the word in the Bible is the word soul. I think the word soul, it can be a little confusing though, because especially we tend to think of soul as like Casper the Friendly Ghost. You know what I mean? Like it's the invisible part of you that goes to heaven when you die. And that's true to an extent, but if you look at the Hebrew word for soul, what it actually means is your being or like your essence or like what makes you you. So another way to think about soul is what is your identity? In other words, when you think what makes you you, when you think of, like when you think about how to present yourself to the world, what other people think of you, what do you think? And this could be stuff like, well, I'm a kind person, or I'm supportive, or I'm a hard worker, I'm an athlete, or I am a Christian. And this could include your gender, this could include your race, this could include different skills that you have, but it's the essence of who you think that you are. And most people think, obviously, your identity is gonna fuel what you think about the world, which is gonna fuel what you do. And most people in the West would look at this and say, that's it, that's the extent of a human being, that is who you are. And Jesus says, that's not necessarily the case. There's a deeper layer that's the most important layer that is fueling all of this, and that layer is called the heart. And the heart is only ever asking one question. Ready? What do I love the most? What do I love the most? And whatever I love the most, that's gonna be what drives me. And that's gonna be what motivates me. And what I love the most is gonna change what my identity is gonna change what I think, and that is going to change what I do. Now, here's what's really interesting. When most of us ask the question, do you believe in God? We tend to ask that question at the intellect level. So we're asking, do you cognitively agree that there is a supreme being of the universe that may or may not have had a son that died and rose again 2,000 years ago? That's typically what we're talking about. When Jesus talks about, do you believe in me? When he uses that word belief, he is only ever talking at the heart level. He's only ever asking, what do you love the most? Okay, is that making sense? Okay. There's a couple things we need to know about this pyramid, which means there's a couple things you need to know about yourself. Let's get a little introspective here. Here's a few things you need to know about this pyramid. Here's the first one. This is very important. The only layer of you that God actually cares about is the heart level. The only layer of you that God actually cares about is the heart level. A lot of people think that Christianity is primarily about the actions that you do and the views that you have and then, you know, publicly portraying yourself as a Christian to the world. But the real thing that God actually wants, the only real thing that he wants is your heart. The reason he cares about those other three is as they pertain to your heart. So let me give you an example just to get our heads wrapped around it. Imagine if at the end of my life, I found out that my wife, Sarah, took great care of me. That's her actions. And she cognitively thought that I was very smart and very capable. That is her mind. And she took on the identity of being my wife because she has my last name and she wears the wedding ring that I got her. Imagine I knew those three things, but I found out in the very last few minutes that she did not sincerely love me from her heart. She was doing all of that for selfish reasons. How would I feel? Absolutely devastated. Because the only thing that I actually want is the affection of her heart. Everything else I care about as it pertains to that. Well, God feels the same way about you. God is first and foremost a loving father. The Bible is remarkably clear about that. And what God wants more than anything is for you to love him back the same way that he loves you. That's the first thing you need to know. But here's the second thing you need to know. Ready? Number two, God knows if he can capture your heart, everything else is gonna flow up. God knows if he captures your heart, everything else will flow up. I know a lot of modern people, probably in this room, who look at this pyramid and they're like, oh, I get it, Josiah, oh, I get it. So I can basically do whatever I want and I can have whatever view I wanna have. And as long as I, you know, love God in my heart, God sees my heart and I'm all good and I'm all fine. But that's not how it works at all. That's not how it works at all. If God has your heart, it will change your identity. And it will change your mind, and it will change your actions. And if it's not doing that, he doesn't actually have your heart. That's why Jesus says in the book of John, he says, if you love me, you will obey my commands. You won't be able to stop yourself from obeying my commands because you cannot disconnect the actions from the heart. But here's the third thing that you need to know. And this third thing is essential to this conversation. You have to understand this. Ready? Here's the third thing. Ready? The heart is the only layer of you that isn't public. The heart is the only layer of you that isn't public. Think of it like an iceberg. You know how they say, like 98% of an iceberg is actually underwater. You can only see the very top layer. The heart is the only layer that is underwater. So I can see your actions, and I can hear your views as you're expressing them to me, and I can see how you present yourself to the world, but I cannot see, and I cannot know your motivations for why you are doing what you are doing. Now, why is, everybody got that? Why is that so important? Look at what Jesus says to the Pharisees in verse 28. He looks at these religious people, template Christians, and he says, here's the problem. Outwardly, you look like righteous people, but inwardly, your what? Your hearts are filled with hypocrisy and lawlessness. Outwardly, everything looks great and godly, but inwardly, you are filled with nothing but evil. I want you to imagine Jesus as an ice cutter, one who cuts ice. Yoo-hoo, big summer blowout, you know. Imagine that's Jesus for a second. And I want you to imagine that Jesus is trying to chisel through this iceberg to get to the very bottom heart level and pull the real you out, your real heart. He's trying to pull you out. The person, the child that he made the day that you were born, he's trying to pull out the real you. Listen, there's two types of people. Some people are heart up people. So some people, Jesus scuba dives to the bottom of your heart and he starts chiseling away from the bottom and he breaks in at the heart level. And when you accept him in at the heart level, you become a child of God. And slowly over the course of time, as your heart is changed, then your identity is gonna change, which is gonna change your mind, which of course is gonna change your actions, and the world is gonna see that. Now listen, it would be very tempting to look at a person who has given God their heart, but that hasn't quite made it all the way up yet, it would be very tempting to look at this person and say, that person is a hypocrite. Why? They still swear. They still have this relationship. They still believe this, this, and that. That person is a hypocrite. And Jesus would look and say, no, you don't understand. No, this person has given me their heart. It just takes time. I'm working on them. They're a work in progress. We are on our way to get there. But then there's a second type of person. And this person is someone who will not let Jesus into their heart. Jesus tried. He tried, but they said absolutely not. So in a last ditch effort, Jesus says, okay, if you're not going to give me your heart, let me try this another way. And Jesus starts chiseling from the top down. So he starts working away at your actions. And eventually you're like, all right, God, I guess I'll go to church now. That's the right thing to do. I guess I'll stop yelling at my wife. That sounds fine. So he changes that. And then he starts chiseling away at your mind. And you're like, all right, God, I guess this thing in the Bible makes sense. You know, Joe Rogan agrees, so I'm on board now, you know. So he starts changing your mind about, and then he starts chiseling away at your identity. And you're like, all right, God, I'll post on this about social media. I'll buy a t-shirt, I'll tell other people I'm a Christian, I will publicly present myself as a Christian. But then when Jesus starts to try and chisel back into your heart again, you say, stop. We've changed enough. You have all these other areas of my life. I made a lot of sacrifices for you. I've made a lot of changes for you. I don't want you to take this thing over here. Stop. You have done enough. Now, here's the problem. Everybody listening, here's the problem. This person is gonna look far more spiritual than the first person. This person is going to look like they love Jesus way more than the first person. But nothing could be further from the truth. This person is completely lost. In fact, in another part of the Bible, in just a descriptive way, Jesus says this person is actually a child of hell. Here's what Jesus is saying. Is everybody listening? Here's what Jesus is saying. It is very possible to have the actions of Jesus, the views of Jesus, and the identity of Jesus without having the heart of Jesus at all, which means you don't have a relationship with him. You have the actions, the identity, and the views, but you do not have the heart, which is the only thing that matters. Now, can I tell you my honest fear? Of course, I'm always afraid that we have Pharisees in our church. You know, every church has Pharisees, but here's what I've learned about Pharisees. You're not listening to me anyways. You know, the moment you realize it's not Big Jeff this morning, you tuned out. You know, I lost you a long time ago. So I learned a long time ago to stop trying to craft messages to the Pharisees, because you're always going to figure out a way that this doesn't apply to you. Here's my honest fear. Here's what I'm really worried about. Jesus has this moment where he looks at his 12 disciples, people that are legitimately trying to follow him, people that legitimately are trying to love him. Like, they're sincere. And he looks at his disciples and he says to them, he says, guys, be careful. Be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. If you've ever baked bread before, you know that all you need to do is put a little tiny bit of yeast into the dough and the whole thing's gonna puff up. And that yeast is going to spread throughout the entire batch, and it's going to cause the bread to inflate. And in the same way, Jesus is saying, guys, you need to understand, if you get just a little bit of the mentality of the Pharisees into your heart, it's going to spread through your whole heart. And it's going to cause your ego to inflate, and it's going to cause your view of yourself to puff up, and you are going to stop the work of God in your life, and you are going to start pushing God out of your heart. Here's my real fear. My real fear is that there are hundreds of us in this room right now who started off as sincere followers of Jesus. I mean, you really meant it. But slowly, over the course of time, you started picking up the attitude and the mindset of a Pharisee. And as God has been chiseling away at your heart, you have looked, and you didn't even realize you did this, but you looked at God and you said, stop. Enough's enough. We can stop right there. You've changed me a ton. And listen, I'm not saying that you're not saved. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. I really don't know. But I am worried that many of us in this room have massively slowed down the work of God in your life. You've even paused the work of God in your life. And I'm worried that many of us are actually headed in the opposite direction altogether. So here's the question. What are the symptoms that I don't have God's heart? What are the symptoms that the person I'm describing is you? How do I know if this is happening in my life or not? And in Matthew chapter 23, Jesus actually gives us a lot of symptoms. I want to look at three of them today, three symptoms of a hypocrite. But before we do that, I need everybody to make a deal with yourself, okay? Throughout the course of these next three symptoms, you're going to be very tempted to think, man, I wish my friend was here to hear this. Man, you're going to be looking across the room and you're like, is she paying attention or is she playing Angry Birds again? You know what I mean? Like that's what you're going to, throughout the whole course of this, you're going to be really tempted to think about the judgmental people in your life that really need to hear what I'm talking about. And I am asking that for the next however many minutes, I'm asking you to please do me the honor of only thinking and evaluating yourself. And that's it. No one else, not your kids, not your husband, no one, just you. Deal? Okay. Three symptoms of a hypocrite, three symptoms that I do not have God's heart. Here's the first one. Ready? You major on the minor things, but you minor on the major things. Symptom number one. You major on the minor things, but you minor on the major things. Look at what Jesus says. So in verse 23, he says about these Pharisees, he says, what sorrow awaits you, teachers of religious law, and you Pharisees, you hypocrites. Now, why are you a hypocrite? Okay, here's why. You carefully give a tenth of even the tiniest herb from your gardens, but you ignore the more important aspects of the law, more important aspects of the Bible, justice, mercy, and faith. Now, here's the context. So there's a command at the very beginning of the Bible where followers of God are supposed to give 10% of our money minimum, 10% of our resources minimum to the poor, to the people in need, to build the kingdom of God, whatever it is. And Jesus says, here's what you religious people are doing. Let's say you got a garden, and let's say you grow cilantro. And so you go out into your cilantro garden, and you're going through it, and you're like, take out your scissors, and you're like, how can I cut off exactly 10% to give to God? I can't forget it. He needs it. And so you're going through, and you're measuring the cilantro, and you're weighing to make sure that you got exactly 10%. And then you go to the temple, and you're like, I've brought this 10% of my cilantro to God. It is a sacrifice to God. And Jesus is looking and saying, you're so careful to do that. And you're so diligent and you work so hard to do that. But if someone in your life can't pay their bills, you're unwilling to help them because you already gave your 10% that week. Or if a criminal knocks on your door and asks, hey, will you teach me the Bible or will you show me the way of God or whatever it is, you won't let them in because you're afraid of the unsafety that they're going to bring into your house. Or the way that your reputation is going to go down by being associated with them. And Jesus says, so let me ask you, religious people, which one do you think God cares about more? The cilantro or the person? Now, that might feel very obvious to you, but here's what I've learned about myself. When I don't know God's heart, I don't know how to rank his commands. When I don't know God's heart, I don't know how to rank his commands. Now, if you grew up in church, it just really stressed you out that I said rank his commands, because you're thinking, well, everything that God says is really, really important. What are you talking about, ranking his commands? Now, listen, those aren't my words. Look at Jesus' words. Look at what Jesus says. You ignore the more important aspects of the law, the more important parts of the Bible, justice, mercy, and faith. Listen, everything that God says is deeply important. But not everything that God says is equally important to him. Let me give you an example. When I was a teenager, I'm the oldest of six kids, and my dad would often put me in charge to babysit my younger five siblings. And so he would go to a movie or on a date with my mom or whatever it was, and here's what he'd do. He'd give me a list of things when he left. And he said, all right, Josiah, I'm gonna leave, and I want you to do these things. First, keep your five siblings safe. Number one, keep your five siblings safe. Next, there's mac and cheese, put it in the oven at 6 o'clock. Next, I need you to feed the dog. Next, I need you to take out the trash. And then lastly, make sure to clean up the house so it's nice and spotless when I come home. Now listen, all of those things are important. And if I love my dad, and if I care about the things that he cares about, I'm going to do all of those things without skipping a beat. But I want you to imagine that my dad comes home and three of my siblings are missing. And the other two have black eyes because they wouldn't do what I said. And so my dad's looking around and he's going, what happened? I go, no, dad, don't worry, calm down. Don't you understand? Dinner was made at 6 o'clock and the trash has been taken out and the dog is fed. And look around this house, it is spick and span. How should my dad, let me ask you, how should my dad respond to me? Exactly the way that Jesus is responding to these Pharisees. You hypocrites, you don't know the Father's heart at all. You don't know what I care about whatsoever. You have proven that you don't really know me. What are always the most important things to God? If you know the Bible, if you've read any of it, if you've been around here for like 3 weeks, what are always the most important things to God? Jesus always says, love God, love people. Love him, take care of his kids. Love him, take care of his kids. That's always the most important thing to God. But here's the real question. When you wake up in the morning, is that the number one thing on your mind? When your alarm goes off, when you think about your faith and your religion and whatever, is that the number one thing that's going through your head? You know, some of us in this room, you're Christians. And so, unfortunately, on your phone, you get a lot of Christian social media content. And I got beef with Christian social media content. But every time you open Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, you know, Facebook, whatever it is, it's just flooded with this Christian content. Now, one time, I just made a list of what always makes it to the top of the Christian algorithm. Have you ever noticed this? Like what is the type of content that always shows up on the phone? It always makes it to the top of the Christian social media content. And I made a list, and here's the list, okay. Top, Christianity and politics. This is no specific order. Christianity and politics. Should Christians celebrate Halloween? That was a big one in October. Demons and theories about demons. What does the Bible say about LGBT issues? When will Jesus return? The end times. Christian parenting. So how to parent your child in the way of the Lord the correct way. This Christian musician is beefing with this other Christian musician. False teachers and pastors. So there's a church in South Carolina, and they're doing it really wrong. I've never been there, but they're definitely doing it wrong. Clips of Christians debating other people, like on the street or whatever. And then here's the big one. Christian dating and marriage advice, Christian relationship advice. Now, I don't think all of those things are showing up on your feed, but I would bet if you are a follower of Jesus, I bet you get a lot of at least some of these things. And all of that, if you were to combine all those topics, I would venture to say that all of that combined represents roughly 90% of Christian social media content. 90% of Christian social media content. Can I give you a crazy stat? Ready? If you were to combine all of the verses in the Bible that talk about all of those things combined, every verse in the Bible, some of those things aren't even in the Bible, but all the verses in the Bible that address those topics, do you know what percent of the Bible that would be? 2%. 2%. And by the way, by many counts, that's being remarkably generous. Now, I am not saying that that 2% of the Bible isn't important. Of course it's important. I'm just asking the question, what about the other 98%? Because here's what all of that has in common. According to Jesus, none of those topics are the most important topic. Now, I don't think everyone in this room is worked up about TikTok level stuff. I think some of you are, by the way. Some of you are definitely worked up about TikTok level stuff. But I don't think everyone in this room is like that. But here's what I do think. I do think that 90% of Christians spend 90% of their time thinking about 2% of the Bible. Everybody's got a different 2%. But I think 90% of Christians spend 90% of their time thinking about 2% of the Bible, which means you don't spend time thinking about the things that God cares about the most, justice, mercy, and faith. Listen, some of you, you got all these convictions about theology, and you know your stuff, bro, and you read about it, and you watch YouTube videos about it, and you know this view, that view, and the other view, and why this one's correct, and you would look, and you're like, the Catholics are wrong, and the Charismatics are shallow, and you got all these views. You got all these views. You study the Bible all day long, and at the same time, you have a horrible relationship with your brother. You guys don't even talk anymore. Now, let me ask you, which one do you think God cares about more? This view over here? Or forgiveness and love, the very thing that he repeats constantly. Others of us in this room, you got all these convictions about churches, the church. And this is what Grace Church is doing wrong, and this is what Grace Church is doing right, and sermons should be this way, and music should be this way, and leadership, you know the problem with leadership, and you go on and on and on about, how church should be done. This is the right way to do it. And at the same time, you absolutely refuse to confess your secret pornography addiction. Let me ask you, which one do you think God cares about more? You being right about this, or you being humble enough to admit that you need help just like everybody else does? Some of you in this room, your parents, maybe like me, I got two young kids, I got two babies. And so you know everything that the Bible says about how to raise your kids the right way. All of your in-church involvement revolves around the kids and learning more about the kids and how to parent well. And you're very passionate about what the Bible says about parenting. But let me ask you a question. Which one do you think God cares about more? What vaccines your baby gets? What preschool they go to? Or the fact that your neighbor across the street is on their way to hell? And you don't have a relationship with them, and God strategically placed you in that community for the sole purpose of not shielding your kids from the world, but bringing the world to Christ. And let me ask you again, why are your kids more important than all of God's other kids? Because I think we got it all wrong. I think there's hypocrisy deep in our system. We don't care about the things that Jesus actually cares about, which leads me to the second symptom. Here's the second symptom. Ready? You are eager to identify who is struggling, but you're unwilling to help that person out of their struggle. Symptom number two. You're eager to identify someone who's struggling, but you're unwilling to help that person out of their struggle. Here's what Jesus says about the hypocrites. He says, they crush people with unbearable religious demands. Here's the standard. But they never lift a finger to ease the burden. When I first started following Jesus, I wanted to know so badly, bro, who the real Christians were and who the fake ones were. I'm like, is Justin Bieber gonna make it? Does Kanye West still qualify? Are the MAGA people gonna make it? What's gonna happen here? Who are the real ones and who are the fake ones? I wanted to know so badly. And so what I do is I scan my friends. I look at my friends and be like, oh, you know, he's living with his girlfriend. You know, I bet he's faking it. I bet he doesn't really mean it. Oh, she went to the bars last night. Oh, I see. And she still lives for the world, or she still believes X, Y, and Z. I bet she's faking it. I bet she's not going to make it. And that's how a lot of us are. And so you walk in this room and you scan this room and you're like, oh, you know, these rich people in Bath. You know, I bet they're shallow. I bet they don't really mean it. Oh man, these people over here, I bet they're faking it. I bet that's not a legit, you know, these young people, you know, whatever. Like you scan the room and you make all of these assessments, or you walk into your work. You walk into your workplace or you walk into your school, whatever it is. And you look around and you're like, oh man, these people are so lost. Woo, man, they're far from God. Wow. The reason they're behaving that way is because they need Jesus. Man, these people are so far from God. Or you walk into your family living room, extended family. You know, it's 4th of July this weekend. You go to your 4th of July party, whatever, and you look at your family, and you're like, man, my family is so toxic. Ooh, my mom. Ah, I can't believe my uncle. They're so toxic. Man, it is so unhealthy. But here's the thing. Then what do you do? They're so bad. Then what do you do next? Here's what you do next. Ready? You leave. You go home. And Jesus says, that is the mark of a hypocrite. You crush people with unbearable religious demands. Here's the standard you're not hitting at, but you never lift a finger to ease the burden. Ready? Anyone who is willing to point out someone else's flaws, but is unwilling to help them is a hypocrite. Anyone who is willing to point out someone else's flaws, but is unwilling to help them is a hypocrite. By the way, I feel like I need to say this, confronting someone is not the same as helping them. I know there's a lot of us here today, you're like, oh, I told them the truth. You know, I helped them. But listen, that's not the same. Telling someone that piano needs moved is very different than getting your shoulder under the piano with them and helping them move it where it belongs. And real quick, side note, real quick, for all the people in here who would say, you know, Grace, the people of Grace Church are really shallow. People at Grace Church are really shallow, because I know that there's a percentage of people that would say something like that. Everybody here is really immature. I was talking to an older pastor a couple months ago. And this guy was probably, I would guess, in his late 60s, something like that. And he said something to me that has really stuck with me. He said, you know, Josiah, you got to remember, the most mature church is always the least mature church. The most mature church is always the least mature church. I'm like, what do you mean by that? And he says, well, if you ever stumble upon a church where everybody believes exactly everything perfectly, and no one is struggling, and everyone has the same view on this, and no one's had a sexual mistake, and no one got drunk last night, and there's no secrets going on, and there's no brokenness, and there's no mess. If you ever go to a church like that, that church is failing the commission Jesus has given them, go and reach the world. If you ever walk into a church, everybody's a Christian, everybody's mature, that church is failing, because Jesus says we're supposed to be a hospital for the sick. The most mature church is always the least mature church. And even as I say that, bro, even as I say that, I'm so tempted to just be like, I'm gonna tell all these hypocrites how hypocritical they are. I'm gonna tell all these judgmental people how judgmental they are. But if I do that, what am I doing? I'm judging judgmental people. What does that make me? That makes me a hypocrite nonetheless. I can't escape it. You can't escape it. We can't escape it. Hypocrisy happens when I hold the standards of God without having the heart of God. Hypocrisy happens when I hold the standards of God without having the heart of God. And bro, I'm so guilty of this. I'm so guilty of this. Yeah. About a year ago, there was this girl in our young adult ministry that I lead. And this girl, bro, she was so gifted, so charismatic, such a leader. She made people feel so welcome. Anytime she went somewhere, 10 people went with her. Like, she was just so, so gifted. But she drove me insane. Because for the 5 years that she was a part of the ministry up to this point, she always did three things. First of all, she was always a gossip. So, you know, she was always spreading information that wasn't true or spreading information that shouldn't have been spread. Second, she was always distracting. Anytime there was like a legit spiritual moment happening or sometime where everybody needed to lock in, she was in the back like getting people to, you know, do whatever it was. And then she was always at the center of drama. Anytime the tiniest thing happened, I found out that this girl, again, was somehow involved in that scenario. She drove me crazy. And so about, you know, every other week or so, myself, Vinny Labello, and Chuck Ominsky, we lead Collective together, we meet up like every other week, and we would ask the question, like, who in our ministry should we shoulder tap to be a leader? Who should we invite into this thing? And every single meeting, her name came up, and every single meeting for 2 years, I said, no, absolutely not. She drives me crazy. No, here's how immature she is. Here's what she's doing wrong. She needs to change. We're not going to ask her until she changed. No, absolutely not. No, absolutely not. 2 years of this goes by, and eventually Chuck and Vinny look at me, and they're like, Josiah, have you ever talked to her about any of this? Josiah, it seems like you're very, very passionate and very, very bothered by these things going on. Have you ever like just had that conversation? And immediately I go, well, I'm not the closest person to her. Like, I feel like, you know, other leaders have, you know, and I start giving all the excuses. And they look at me and they're like, Josiah, I think you need to talk to her. So I'm driving home that day and I'm feeling convicted, bro. I'm feeling convicted. And so I shoot her a text and I'm like, hey, would you be down sometime next week to come to the office? I just want to talk to you about some stuff. She responds, absolutely, would love to be there. A couple days go by and the meeting comes up and I'm driving to the office and I'm thinking, this is going nowhere. I'm just doing this to have a clear conscience. That's the reason I'm doing this. So I'm driving to this meeting. I walk in and I look at her and I tell her, I'm like, hey, I need to tell you something. I believe in you so much. And I just start talking about how gifted she is. You're charismatic, you lead others, you make people feel so safe. And I wasn't making any of it up. I'm like, God can really use you, and it's all 100% true. But then I looked and said, but can I tell you what's getting in the way? Can I tell you why none of those gifts are ever really gonna go anywhere? And I told her about those three things: the gossip, the distracting, the drama. And she looked at me. And I will never forget this. I will probably never forget this till the day I die. She looks at me, and I can tell that the words, you know, stung. And she looks up at me with the most innocent face and says, Josiah, it's crazy you're telling me about this today. It's crazy. Why? Last night, I was spending time with God because I've been trying to take my relationship with God more seriously. And God convicted me about exactly those three things. And then she said, will you help me become the kind of person that you're talking about? I don't know how. Will you help me become this person? No one's ever showed me how to do that before. And as soon as she said that, in 5 seconds, my heart pivoted from the heart of a Pharisee, here's the standard, here's the standard, here's the standard, to the heart of my Father in heaven. Oh, shoot, you don't have a family that would teach you any of this. Oh, shoot, all your friends are far from God. You're just a daughter struggling. You're just a child of God struggling, just like me. And can I tell you something? Can I tell you something? That girl, ever since that conversation, literally from the next day moving forward, that girl has become one of the most helpful, thoughtful, humble people in our entire church. I bet you many of you in this room have benefited from her serving you, and you don't even know it. Listen, why is all of this such a big deal to Jesus? Why is this such a big deal to Jesus? Ready? Because the heart of your Father in heaven is always about compassion. The book of James says that God's mercy, his compassion, triumphs over his judgment, his standards. The number one word used to describe Jesus' emotions in the New Testament is compassion. The heart of your Father in heaven is always about compassion. A heart without God, it's always about comparison. It's always about critiquing, and it's always about condemning, but a heart that's like God will always have compassion, which leads to the third and final symptom. I'm pushing God out of my heart that I'm becoming a hypocrite, and here's what it is, ready? I've completely forgotten Jesus' compassion for me. Third symptom, most important one. I've completely forgotten Jesus' compassion for me. When I was 10 years old, I don't know, did any of you have like a neighborhood kid gang that you were part of? You know what I mean? Where it's like every day at the same time, all the kids came out and hung out. So growing up, around like 4:30 after school, there was probably like, I don't know, 12, 15 kids in our neighborhood. Same time, somebody would go run around the neighborhood. We'd all get out on our bikes. I know like a bunch of kids now have like iPad gangs. We had bikes. So we got on our bikes and we just did mischief in the neighborhood. It was really awesome. And the leader of our neighborhood gang was this kid named Brandon. And the reason Brandon was a leader is because Brandon was a teenager. Ooh, Brandon had Halo at his house. So we worshiped the ground that Brandon walked on. And anything Brandon wanted to do, we're in. Brandon was the coolest. Well, I remember there was this one day, and every kid was out that day. Every kid was out. And we were all standing in a circle by the stop sign on our street. And we were just like, you know, talking, making jokes, you know, whatever it was. And I don't remember what I said. I really don't remember what I said. I was just running my mouth about something. And as I'm running my mouth, I say something that was super dumb. And as soon as I say this, all of the 15 kids immediately just turn on me. and they start ripping me the shreds. Josiah, you idiot. I can't believe, you know, and they're saying everything dumb that I've ever done and everything that's wrong with me. And as they're insulting me, the most embarrassing possible thing that could ever happen to a 10-year-old boy started happening to me. My eyes started welling up with tears. You know, if you're a 10-year-old boy and you cry in front of your friend, you should just give up right then and there. That's the end of your life. That's the end of what you got going on. And so my eyes start welling up with tears, and one little tear, it starts going down my face. And you know when you can feel like I'm about to start bawling, like this is gonna happen right now. That was about to start happening. And none of the kids noticed except Brandon. Brandon was the first person to notice, but everyone was about to notice. And I'll never forget what Brandon did. When Brandon noticed that I was about to start crying, the first thing that he did was he just stood in front of me. He just stood in front of me. The next thing that he did was he just started defending me. He said, you know, Josiah makes a really good point. No way I made a good point. You know, Josiah's pretty, you know, he rocks a halo, actually. You know, whatever it is. And then the next thing Brandon did was he changed the topic. He brought something else up that he thought all the other kids would go for, and sure enough, they did. The topic got changed, and none of the other kids realized that I was about to start crying that day. Listen, what did Brandon do? Brandon shielded me. Brandon used his status to draw attention, not towards my shame and towards my mistakes and failures, but away from them. And Brandon was willing to pay the social cost for being associated with me. Everybody listen to me. This is the most important thing I'm going to say today. That is exactly what Jesus does for you. That is exactly what Jesus does for you. When you make a mistake, you know, that those sexual mistakes in your past that just kind of flash in your mind real quick, and you're not sure what to do about them and the memories and whatever. That time that you said the thing that you shouldn't have said, the relationship that you ruined, the marriage that you destroyed, when you keep thinking about the past, you know, when you can't pull yourself together, bro. Just a couple days ago, I got so mad about something. I was so mad. And when I calmed down, I was just ashamed. I'm like, God, I'm failing you. Like, what's wrong with me? Like, I can't believe I reacted that way. And many of us, you have a struggle that won't go away. You made a mistake this week. You're not sure what it is. You made a mistake today. You're always failing. And when you fail and when you're in shame, what is Jesus' reaction always? Jesus' reaction with nothing but love in his heart, the first thing that he does is he stands in front of you and he puts his arms out like this and he starts defending you to all the people that are trying to come at you. No, you don't understand. I love him. You don't understand. She's my friend. You don't understand. I'm proud of him. You don't understand. That person is mine. And then any rocks that get thrown, any punishment that comes your way, Jesus takes that head on so that you will not have to. What does Jesus do? Jesus shields you, and at tremendous cost to himself, because while his arms are stretched out like this, blood is pouring down his body because he's absorbing the cost for every mistake that you made. And by the way, that's a punishment that I deserve, and that's a punishment that you deserve. But Jesus is taking it in your place. Why? Because that's what compassion is. That is what compassion is. And that's what God's heart has been the whole time. When I couldn't get out from under my sin, Jesus got under my cross. When everyone else called me a fake, Jesus called me his friend. When everyone else drew attention to my mistakes, Jesus only drew attention to his grace and his forgiveness. When everyone else's hands were pointing at me in accusation, Jesus' hands were nailed to a cross in love for me. And if Jesus did that for me, and if I have any understanding of that whatsoever, if I truly believe that that actually took place, how could I not do exactly the same thing for everybody else in my life, no matter what they have done? That's the heart of God. So here's where I want to end. I just want to end on some questions. And I just want to use these questions for self-reflection. Ask these about yourself. Everybody take a deep breath. Okay. I just got a few questions about if you have God's heart. Here's the first one. Ready? Number one. Is there anyone in my life I don't have compassion for? In other words, is there anyone in my life that I'd be unwilling to stand in front of? I'd be unwilling to take the hit for. Because if that's true about anyone in my life, that means I've forgotten what Jesus has done for me. Number two, is there any command in the Bible that I've turned into a judgment mechanism? In other words, what's your favorite rule in the Bible to hold people accountable to? Because those people that do that, whatever that thing is, first of all, you think you're earning your way to God by not doing that thing. So that there's a big problem in your heart. But second of all, that's not what those commands are for. Those commands are meant to lead us to God, not shove people away from him. Next. Is there anyone in my life that I won't lift a finger to help? I'll be honest, this might be the biggest one for a lot of this room. Is there anyone in my life that frustrates me? That every time I go into work, that person bothers me. That every time I show up to I notice what they're doing wrong. Is there anyone in my life? Okay, here's your next step. Ready? You got to ask that person out for coffee. You got to give that person a phone call, not to confront them, but to get to know them and get to understand their story. For many of us, that's what you need to do this week. That's the only natural response to Jesus's compassion for you. And lastly, ready? Are you struggling? Are you struggling? I know there's many of us in this room and you've avoided Jesus, you've avoided Christianity, you've avoided church for a very, very long time because you think that Jesus is just gonna be another person pointing at you and pointing out your mistakes. And you think that Jesus is just gonna be another person throwing a rock. And you think that Jesus is just gonna be another person putting a burden onto you. And I'm just trying to tell you, listen, bro, even if every Christian in the world is a fake and every church in the world is an absolute sham, that is not Jesus Christ. Jesus is nothing but compassion. And all he wants to do is shield you. All he wants to do is protect you. And all he wants to do is have a relationship with you. But you have to want to have a relationship with him. I love this verse from Jesus in the Bible. I've been thinking about this for a while. Jesus says this in the book of Matthew chapter 11. He says, listen, are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion and trying to follow all the rules? Then come to me. Take my yoke upon you. Let me get under this with you. Let me teach you. I'll show you because I'm humble and gentle at heart and you will find rest for your souls. Will you invite Jesus into your life? You can do that today. I'm gonna pray for us. I just want you to spend some time with God. Man's gonna come out. They're gonna lead us into just some prayers. Let me pray right now. Jesus, God, let this make sense. Let this speak to our hearts. Let us understand it. Let us follow it. God, I pray for any person here that does not know you. I pray that that would change today, that they would come to know you. God, I pray for any next step that we need to take, a person that we need to talk to. I pray that we would actually do that. I ask this all in your name, Jesus Christ. Amen.